Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. Sound financial management is essential to the effective stewardship of taxpayer dollars and enabling federal agency decision makers to make tough choices on day-to-day and long-term management challenges. Good government, that is government fiscally responsible to its people, has as its charge making operations more efficient and accountable, getting rid of wastes, saving money, and making services more responsive. In an era of tight budgets, this charge has taken on new significance beyond the fundamentals to ensuring the improvement of financial management government-wide. What are the top federal financial management priorities? How does the Office of Management and Budget work to implement them? What is the federal government doing to reduce and eliminate improper payments? And how is OMB working to transform the way government does business? We will explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Danny Warfel, Controller, Office of Federal Financial Management within the Office of Management and Budget. Danny, welcome to the show. It's great to have you back.
It's great to be here, Mike.
Also joining our conversation from IBM is Steve Watson. Steve, welcome.
Thank you, Michael.
So, Danny, before we delve into specific initiatives, perhaps you can provide us with a brief overview of the history and mission of the Office of Management and Budget. How is it organized? What's the size and scale of its operation?
Well, the Office of Management and Budget has a long history. I think its birth was in the 1920s, actually, when at that time it was called the Bureau of Budget, and it moved out of the Treasury Department and became a standalone entity that had more direct nexus to the president, the White House, and the executive office of the president. Later on in its history, it added management functions to it. And the name expanded to the Office of Management and Budget. We have roughly 500 people in the organization, which is small by government standards. So it's a place where everybody knows your name, and it has a relatively flat hierarchy. Which what I mean by that is, because of our size and because of the need for us to be nimble and dynamic and meeting the various challenges that we have, it's not unusual for, you know, anyone from the highest ranking political appointee to an SES branch chief or even a GS9 policy analyst right out of graduate school to be meeting with the director of OMB and to be involved in a lot of kind of dynamic and high profile situations. So for that reason, it's an enormously exciting place to work. And just to give you a little bit more detail on how we're structured. Mm-hmm. Of the 500 people that we have, it's about two-thirds are what we call on the budget side of the house and one-third on the management side of the house. And on the budget side of the house, we essentially break up the government into smaller pieces and have dedicated offices that work in those areas. So we'll have a labor branch, an education branch, a homeland security branch, and some of their core responsibilities involve, of course, developing the budget request for that agency. And then the examiners, in addition to working on the budget, involve themselves in a whole host of activities, just soup to nuts. Everything that you can imagine is involved with that agency. And that's really where that's likely a good segue to the management side of OMB, which takes much more of a horizontal view. The offices that are set up on the management side for things like financial management, which is the organization that I currently lead, procurement, performance, information technology, We have an office that deals with information and regulations, and they are looking across the – those offices have responsibility across the entire government. So for me, as an example, I have relationships with every chief financial officer in the government. I learn about what they're doing, what their challenges are, what the solutions that they're looking to initiate to overcome those challenges. And that's where our role can be so critical, because our responsibility is across government. We don't have a particular responsibility to dive deep into the Education Department or the Homeland or the Defense Department. Instead, our focus is on the area that we're responsible for, in this case, financial management, across the whole government.
Danny, that was a good overview. If we go a little deeper, can you talk a little bit more about your duties and responsibilities as controller and how the Office of Federal Finance Financial Management supports OMB's overall mission?
Absolutely. The Office of Federal Financial Management was created in the Chief Financial Officers Act of 1990. What was going on at the time was there was a growing sense through a variety of different inputs, such as reports from the Government Accountability Office, reports from inspectors general, that were pointing to fundamental lapses that were going on in agencies in our ability to track funds, account for federal funds, mitigate instances of fraud, error, and waste. And there was a desire to develop a framework across government to manage these challenges more effectively. And they looked to the corporate environment as a model. And one of the things they saw as a gap was the fact that that corporations generally have chief financial officers in place and also have kind of a rallying cry around a set of standard financial statements and an audit of those financial statements that helps instill some discipline and some rigor around fundamental questions of how the money is being tracked, how assets are being accounted for, how liabilities are being recorded and looked at, and how these items are being made transparent to shareholders in the corporate environment. And obviously, the analogy for the federal government would be the taxpayer. And so that the CFO Act was born out of the desire to establish a framework across government that could help us improve our discipline and our approaches on these basic issues of accounting, internal controls, and finance. And modeling it after the private sector, the CFO Act of 1990 created a chief financial officer position within all of our major federal agencies. Further initiated the process of financial statements, annual financial statements, and put the CFO in charge of the development of a system and a process and technologies that were going to help capture all that information, put it in financial statements, and have it audited.
Well, I'd like to pick up on the idea of challenges, and in particular, given the portfolio you manage and the expansiveness, what are your top three challenges that you face, and have you sought to address those challenges?
Well, let me start with the most obvious challenge that I think anyone sitting in a government leadership position is looking at right now, and that is the declining resource environment that we find ourselves in. It is no surprise that the budget cuts that we're facing impact all parts of government, and chief financial officers are no different. And so you have this dual-edged challenge of trying to modernize and make government more efficient. And you know, we say a lot, it's never been more critical for us to do so because of the challenging budgetary situation that we find ourselves in. The number one challenge that I have right now is working with federal agencies to define those steps that they can take and those investments that they can make that are going to have the highest impact and that are going to be the most shrewd, for lack of a better term, in managing this tension. The second one that I would articulate is, in order to navigate the tension that I just described of a lower resource base and a need, a necessity to become more efficient, we've got to break old habits and we've got to innovate to do so. So the example I'll use is with respect to information technology. You know, we have an approach that we've taken to modernize business systems in government over the last decade, and the approach has proven to be slow and expensive. We have to do them more quickly and get more critical performance out of them. And the third issue, and it's very related to the other two, is what I call creating a culture of collaboration. If one agency has a success, how do we create an environment that other agencies are obsessed with what that success was, how is it achieved, and how can I learn about how that success might impact my area? Or a failure. What happened? What went wrong?
Danny, you mentioned you started your career with the Clinton administration. Could you describe your career path for our listeners? How did you begin your career? What brought you to your current leadership position as controller?
Thank you. I love talking about the career path because it's been such an enjoyable and non-predicted road. I finished my graduate program. I got a joint degree in law and public policy, law from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and public policy from Duke. So I come out of graduate school, and I had a professor at Duke, someone by the name of Dick Stubbing, who was a senior career official at OMB during basically from the President Kennedy days through the Reagan days. But he, when I was in graduate school, was very complimentary of the life and times of being an OMB examiner. And I developed a kind of a mentor-mentee relationship with Dick. He encouraged me to, as part of my career choices, to look very closely at OMB. And so I did. And the more I learned, the more I realized that this is the type of environment I wanted to be in. So I did that full court press, you know, went up to, you know, try to get as many interviews as I could, got a job at OMB as a GS9 policy analyst, you know, kind of fresh out of school, and worked there for several years. Got a little bit worried that this law degree that I had gotten might be going stale. So I had the opportunity to move over to the Justice Department and serve as a trial attorney in the Civil Rights Division, which I did for several years. I decided to return to OMB and came back and served as a budget examiner in the education branch, and moved over to financial management in around 2003, and just started to really, what I like to say, that's when I started to throw right-handed in almost every case. It really just all came naturally to me. Once I landed in OFFM, the job just got a little easier for me, which I think means that I had found a natural fit. The way I saw the world, the skills that I could bring were a natural fit for that type of job, because I was more of a vertical person than a horizontal person. Going back to my further analogy, liked seeing more of the government-wide view than the deeper dive into a given agency. I liked both, but I liked the vertical view better. I was able to kind of achieve performance that would get me promoted. I made it up to be the deputy controller, which is the highest-ranking civil servant position within OFFM. And then I was doing what you're supposed to do, being the acting controller as the Bush administration was transitioning into the Obama administration. And very early on in the current administration, it became clear that financial management and the work of financial management professionals and CFOs was going to be very central to a lot of the initiatives within the Obama administration. Because I found myself from almost the day the transition team arrived through January 20th, engaged in a lot of challenging dynamic assignments. And since I was the only one there, I got to interface directly with people like Peter Orszag, who was the director, Rob Neighbors, who was the deputy director, and others. And one day they came to me and they said, well, we're looking for a controller. How would you like to join the administration as the controller and make that jump from career civil servant to political appointee? And so that was kind of the can't say no moment. I had always envisioned a long career at OMB. And even though becoming a member of a particular administration puts that longer term plan on hold, it's such a hard thing to say no to serve a president that I believe in, an administration that I believe in, and so I've had this great privilege of having the experience of being a career civil servant leader in an organization and moving into the realm of political appointee. And considering, I consider myself a student in everything that I do. I'm a sponge. I'm trying to learn as much as I can. I almost really feel like I never left graduate school because I continue to feel like I'm on that learning curve. The notion that I could get this type of different experience to enrich my my professional development and my professional life was just the opportunity of a lifetime.
I'd be remiss in not asking you, speaking of infusing this passion that you have, is what are the characteristics of an effective leader?
There are three things that I think are critical to professional development and advancement. And I say patience, competence, and relationship building. And I think they're all three, they're interrelated and they're all critical. Patience is that, you know, you stick around. You don't jump at the first sign of trouble. You don't jump at the first great thing that comes your way. You're patient and you're plotting and you stick around. And then competence, mm-hmm. being good at what you do. You know, not only are you demonstrating an ability to see the long term and not react in a particular moment, kind of that steady hand at the tiller, and also to the extent that you have, you know, studied your craft and understand its various moving pieces. I mean, I don't think you have to be a genius to be successful, but but to the extent you're competent and you're a student of what you're doing and trying to improve. And then third, relationship building. And that is, you know, it sounds trite, but it's being a team player. Sometimes I use the term low maintenance. You know, you want to be low maintenance. My new favorite phrase, I use it, my staff is getting bored with it, but I use it all the time. I say, I do not have the monopoly on the right answer. That recognition up front that I don't have the monopoly on the right answer helps develop kind of a collaborative spirit to how we attack these challenges.
What are the top federal financial management priorities? We will ask Danny Warfel, Controller, Office of Federal Financial Management within OMB, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.